Welcome back.
I think the question, do you think Halloween when you hear this song?
I don't. Black Magic Woman, for those of you on Facebook who may or may not be listening to the music, we decided we're going to go with a Halloween music theme, Thriller, Monster Mash, that sort of thing. And this was tossed out by Scott. Because, Black Magic Woman by Santana.
Yeah.
It's a nice song, for sure.
Yeah, but I don't think Halloween. Welcome back to Inside Sports Medicine. T.O. Surreal, Brad Ballard, Scott Blumenthal. We usually take calls the next segment, so I'll give out the phone number now so you guys can queue up. 888-787-1310. Jacob will be delighted to answer the phone, queue you up, and we will answer your sports medicine questions. Not necessarily in the order they were received. But yeah, 888-787-1310.
In the order of what we want to talk about.
Correct. A really good question came in via our Facebook feed. One of our regulars is scheduled to have what we all consider to be a relatively minor hand procedure. It's a trigger finger release. At some point, we need to talk about that.
Yeah, it's pretty common.
Trigger finger is when the digit, typically it's the thumb, physically gets stuck. And you either have to pull it straight or you have to make it pop straight. It's a bit uncomfortable. It's a bit distressing. And unfortunately, it's relatively common. Well, there's a procedure for that where you release the tight fibrous band that limits the motion of the thumb. It's tiny, tiny incision, literally 5 minutes. And I used to do those a lot when I was younger. Anyway, so his hand specialist is suggesting general anesthesia. So Jay's a bit uncomfortable with that, especially given his age. And he kind of wants us to comment about it. I don't recall ever doing a general for something like this.
It seems like a lot.
I mean, it can almost be done under local, for gosh sakes. If not local, at least a regional where you numb up the
hand. Like a regional block, yeah.
Numb up the hand. But a general, and I think that's probably philosophical in that, hey, we'll start the IV, we'll give you a little propofol, you'll be done, you'll be asleep for 5 minutes, and, you know, everybody lives happily ever after.
Mm-hmm.
I can kind of see the rationale, but if the patient's uncomfortable with it, go with a block.
Right, yeah. Seems like a lot.
It does. It does.
Scott?
I agree. I mean, what do you call it? It's a nothing burger
so we
operation.
Have, so, so I have somewhat of a similar procedure coming up next week, and it's – and I'm also – but I'm recommending a general, and let me tell you why. So it's a – young lady, a mom, who broke her ankle and has a syndesmosis injury. We fixed the ankle fracture. We've got a couple of screws going across the syndesmosis. And typically, you know, 10, 12 weeks down the road, I'll take those screws out before they break. And for that, I'll put them to sleep for 5 minutes. I mean, I've actually heard of doctors taking it out in the office.
Yes.
I feel very uncomfortable doing that.
That's tough.
And my rationale, Jay, if you're listening and trying to figure out why I'm being inconsistent, is it's bone work. Yeah. And, you know, I can numb up the skin, but I certainly can't numb up the periosteum or the bone.
Yeah.
So if it's bone work and I'm taking out a screw, let's start the IV. Let's give you some propofol a la Michael Jackson. Keep you asleep for a couple of minutes. Yeah. Take it out and we're done.
Yeah.
Now, she's younger. She doesn't have medical issues. I don't have any hesitation there.
Right.
But the differentiation, at least in my mind, is the bone work versus soft tissue work.
Right. It hurts.
Yeah. Well, it's a really deep aching.
Yeah.
It's a visceral pain, which is kind of hard to describe.
I don't know if I'd want to be awake when someone's taking a screw out of my bone.
Yeah, I know. I know. And that's why we don't.
Yeah.
So you took my brain somewhere. You took my brain somewhere. So when I had my ACL surgery the very first time, we did it under a spinal. and this was me. I was the patient.
Mm-hmm.
We did an under a spinal, and so the bottom half of my body was numb, and they were working, and I was able to watch the monitor and kind of see the progression, which was a little bit distressing.
I can only imagine.
But the part that I thought was the creepiest
mm-hmm.
was when they were drilling the tunnels into my tibia and femur.
Mm-hmm.
I could feel the vibration, obviously yeah. no pain because it was spinal. And I really, that was extraordinarily uncomfortable. I wish I was asleep for that.
Yeah.
And it wasn't because of pain. It was
the noise.
But that's
I knew what was happening.
Right. Yeah. And that's also like it's got to be a deep
yeah, it was a
feeling,
deep,
but it's not a, but you can't feel it. It's
exactly.
just a weird.
It was a yeah. sensation. I mean,
yeah.
I could feel something.
Right.
Anyway.
Yeah.
That was a little gross on a Saturday morning. You were on the phone the whole last segment.
I'm just getting caught up on
stuff.
Things to talk about.
You got
to
do it now?
No. This is all relevant to the show.
And that's why we have pre-production meetings.
Give out the number.
Right.
888-787-1310.
I've got some royal medically related news. If there's time.
Okay. You mean like the queen royal?
Queen.
Why are we talking about this?
Because I'm just kind of, because there's something medically related in here.
Did she hurt her ankle playing rugby?
No, she just got out of the hospital. And it says here, Queen Elizabeth has been getting lots of suggestions from her medical doctors, including them advising her to reportedly stop drinking her nightly martinis. She's 95.
I didn't know the queen took nightly
martinis.
The
queen is 95?
She's 95. Let her drink her martinis. I mean, give me a break.
Absolutely.
I didn't know the queen was 95.
Yeah. And she's very functional and very aware.
Yeah, oh, dude. That's why I'm saying I didn't know she was 95.
But she was in the hospital, and they're advising her a couple of weeks of rest. You know, that whenever those kind of things start.
Dehydrated, probably.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with that.
From the martinis?
Probably.
Maybe.
Yeah. I wonder when, you know, like, there's the nightly martini, but the articles
they use plural?
Martinis. So I wonder how many martinis the petite 95-year-old queen can knock down tonight.
I'm a lightweight. One martini and I'm asleep.
Yeah.
All right. So I'm going to shift gears and talk about real sports medicine now.
All right.
Don't sound so excited, Scott.
No. Everybody wants to hear about Dax.
Oh, yeah.
Thing. No, we're going to talk about Dax, but I want to give you some bigger picture, 30,000-foot view. And we've been talking about this for years, and I've said it on the show many times. NFL's got an injury problem. Football's got an injury problem. Sports science is way ahead of sports medicine, meaning we know how to work out. We know how to eat. We know what supplements to take. Our players are our athletes, male and female, are bigger, faster, stronger than they've ever been. And unfortunately, that comes with injuries. Number one is the collision injuries, because when they're bigger, faster, stronger, all of a sudden when you have 250-pound running backs going up against a 350-pound defensive tackle, the collision is much bigger, especially when they're both going faster.
Mm-hmm.
So the collisions are worse, but also you get the muscle tendon junction problems. All of a sudden, the biceps are huge. All of a sudden, the triceps are monstrous. All of a sudden, the thighs are the size of my waist. And that kind of muscular hypertrophy has a limit,
mm-hmm.
which is why we're seeing the hamstrings, the groins, the calf injuries,
the pec tears.
Yeah. We're seeing a slew of muscular injuries that are probably off the field. And with that, we're going to talk about the Dak thing. He's got a calf strain. We being the sports medicine world, we don't have a good answer for muscle tear. When you tear those muscle fibers, it's going to take its time to heal.
But haven't they kind of always been there?
Nope.
And
I'm going to tell you, they're more. They're more now than I've ever seen.
But if you're a bigger human being, your muscle tendons junctions have to be stronger.
Yeah, but there's a limit.
Yeah,
there's a threshold.
Yeah.
There's a threshold as to I can leg press 750 pounds. And if I do 760, a fiber is going to break. There's a threshold. Look, these guys.
It's got to be a threshold.
These guys are bigger, faster, stronger, and it's unbelievable. Have you seen? I would love to do a study on this. A kid graduating from college as a freshman, sophomore, junior, senior, college football.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at him a year later in the NFL.
Yeah.
They're all bigger. They're all stronger. They don't look like they're you know, in college they were boys, now they're men, and we're talking big men.
Isn't there a way to, I don't know, to do a biomechanical study looking at different morphologies of athletes and then somehow figuring out what it takes to tear an ACL on a big guy versus a little guy?
It's been done.
Or an Achilles rupture.
All that's been done. We know how many newtons it takes to tear an ACL.
But wouldn't it be greater force in a 2021 football player versus a 1951 football player now that they are bigger, faster, stronger?
So the answer is yes. It's widely known that I went to Sam Houston State. I'm very proud of my Bearcats, won a national championship. And about 4 or 5 years ago, they were celebrating the 100th anniversary of their football squad. And in the Sam Houston magazine, they had some stats from 1915 versus 2015.
Right.
The average weight of a Sam Houston football player way back 100 years ago was like 168 pounds.
Jeez.
And fast forward now, it's like,
I don't think there's anybody in the league who's 150 pounds.
You can't
or
play.
168 pounds. There's no way.
You'll be decimated by the defense.
You'll be destroyed.
So we are bigger, faster, stronger over the last 100 years, and we do know how many newtons it takes. And that's why I say sports science is way ahead of sports medicine. And that's why you're seeing these kinds of muscle tendon, Achilles tendon ruptures, biceps, pec ruptures, and we don't have a fix. What are you going to do? Tell them, hey, quit getting so bigger?
Right.
I mean, I don't know what the answer is, but the NFL's got an injury problem.
So, Scott, you make a good point. If you get stronger, the tensile strength on your tendons should also adapt to that strength.
That's my point.
Yeah.
Your point is valid given enough time.
So I think it can take more tensile strength than it did prior. But at some point, it's a physics equation.
It is exactly a physics equation. Your Achilles is not going to be the size of your forearm. It can't.
Yeah.
So no matter how strong your calf gets, your Achilles cannot respond proportionately.
So I guess that's my question. I would have thought the Achilles could respond proportionally if your calf gets bigger.
And I think it does. I mean, I put it this way. I think it does get stronger.
Yes.
And those muscle tendon junctions get stronger.
But not enough.
But at some point, if you plant with a certain amount of force and, you know, it's just an aggressive thing, I think at some point just the physics says, well, the force is too much. I don't care how strong the muscle and tendon junction has adapted over time.
So here's another question. Is the athlete different in terms of their psyche of return to play? Like a football player in Mike Ditka's era who has a soft tissue injury, it's like sees the team doc and says, you know, I did an x-ray. It's not broken.
It's just a pull. Go on out.
You pulled something.
Yeah.
Get out there and play. And, you know, they played with biceps ruptures and pec ruptures and calf strains. And you watch them limp on the field. I mean, these guys.
Yeah, but we know better now, Scott.
Right.
We can't. I mean, as a doc, if I had a kid with a biceps, I remember Ken Norton Jr. played for the Cowboys, had a distal biceps rupture, elected not to have surgery at the time, finished out the season.
Jeez.
And at the end of the season, ended up having to have a salvage procedure, a tenodesis or something. But I think nowadays, that would never happen.
Yeah.
But never ever happen.
About like a calf strain in the old days? They'd just get out there and limp and play.
Yeah, but here's what we know now. What we know now is if it's a calf strain and so many fibers are involved, the recurrence rate is so high that you can't take the risk.
Right.
And I think this is where we are with Dak. After this break, we're going to talk a little bit about that. 888-787-1310. This is Inside Sports Medicine on the Ticket.